And the best thing for coming here is the Rex.
Well, we're in the middle of race week here in Charlotte. It's NASCAR's biggest week and one of the cities as well. On Saturday night, Denny Hamlin won the Sprint All-Star Race. He takes home $1 million for his efforts. But between today and Sunday's Coca-Cola 600, that will seem like a drop in the bucket. Saturday night's race brought in $90 million into the local economy. And by the end of next Sunday's race, $230 million will have been spent, added as the result of the, I was going to say tens of thousands, but it's really hundreds of thousands of race fans who come here not just to watch the races at Charlotte Motor Speedway, but also to enjoy Speed Week, the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and many of the other things that Charlotte has to offer. So let's talk racing, its impact on Charlotte, how the sport is changing to keep up with modern times, what NASCAR and Charlotte Motor Speedway are doing to attract younger fans. Tim Hagler is Vice President of Community Relations at Charlotte Motor Speedway and former mayor of Harrisburg. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. David Miller is Executive Director of the North Carolina Motorsports Association. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Tom Jensen is Manager of Digital Content for FoxSports.com. He writes, obviously, about NASCAR and racing. Good morning. How nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
According to an article in Fox News, on FoxNews.com, the All-Star Race has been a dud in recent years. I don't know if you agree with that, Tom, but how was Saturday's race?
It was very well attended. It was unfortunate that there was not a little bit more on-track action. We had a fantastic truck race Friday night, third closest finish in history. I believe it was 5 or 6 one-thousandths of a second. We didn't have those kind of fireworks Saturday night in the All-Star race, which leads me to believe next year we might be looking at a pretty dramatic format change to try and get some passing at the end of the race.
You know, I have a good friend who is a very big race fan, and she has gravitated toward the truck races because she says they're more exciting. They're more like NASCAR used to be. What would you say about that?
There's a strong sentiment for that. The thing that truck races have is they're shorter in length. So guys have to be up on the wheel and going all out the whole time. And it tends to produce you have some older veterans. You have some young kids coming up. It's a more eclectic mix of drivers, and there's a lot of fireworks and a lot of excitement in the truck racing. You know, we at Fox Sports One covered trucks when we're back in our old speed days, and it's a fun racing series. It's really fun.
And a lot of things happen that don't happen in NASCAR anymore, and maybe that's because of rule changes along the way, or maybe it's because these guys are really hungry. I don't know. Back in the day, NASCAR and wrestling were the biggest sports in Charlotte, and they put us on the map nationally. That's what we were the epicenter of all those things. Now we have the NBA. We have the NFL. How big is racing in this region today in comparison to what it was 20 years ago?
On the scale of economic impact, it is accepted that racing to the North Carolina economy alone is a $6.2 billion annual contribution, which is a significant sum when you look at it. That's across the board: race teams, hospitality, racetrack, ticket sales, and all of the things that go into. So it's still very impressive, and certainly the fan loyalty continues to be strong. I know that Tim with the Charlotte Motor Speedway can address that a bit more, but racing as an economic impact to Charlotte, it's pretty big and pretty important.
Yeah. How many racetracks are, excuse my ignorance, but how many racetracks are there in North Carolina?
Well, Charlotte is the main NASCAR track, but if you combine drag racing as well as dirt tracks and everything else, that count escapes me because virtually every little town
has
its dirt track.
Do you count those tracks in the $6.2 billion figure that you just mentioned?
All economic impact was studied, and that is inclusive of that. And, of course, that's companies that sell parts. That's, again, tickets, race teams, everything combined. Mm-hmm. The majority of it is in this Charlotte region, though.
You know, we'll talk about this later in the program, but Charlotte Motor Speedway removed some seats in the last year, and we'll talk about why. But somebody said in some article that I read that between Atlanta and Charlotte removing seats, that would take away – if you did that in an NFL stadium, that would take away half the stadium. That's how big this is. You don't even miss these seats at Charlotte Motor Speedway. How healthy is business at Charlotte Motor Speedway?
Business is really good. You know, you look at the size of the stadium, the size of the track, and what the fan experience is all about. And we have to continue to stay on the cutting edge of fan experience mm-hmm. and what we can do to keep them coming to our events. Obviously, the competition on the track is the main fan experience, but also those things that go along with it. And long gone are the days, I believe, of sitting in the small, narrow chairs and watching a 600-mile race. People want to get up. They want to move around. They want to socialize. They want to have talks with their friends. They want to do some business consulting and talking. And then they have their social media. So they like to move around.
There's a race.
Oh, yeah.
Who
that's
knew?
Right. Yeah. The hospitality is the big part of it. You know, there's pre-race. There's tailgating. There's all kind of experiences that we have that's related into the racing that the fan has to come out and see. So with us being able to make modifications, enhancing the fans' quality of life while they're at the track is the biggest thing for us at the Charlotte Motor Speedway.
There was a period in the 80s and 90s when NASCAR was really trying to spread this sport across the country. They were building tracks in places that are not normally associated with stock car racing, including California. Has that slacked off a bit now, or has it kind of just they were successful and they're running races out there, and so they've done what they've tried to do? Where are we in that process?
I think the only market they really covet that they're not in right now is the Pacific Northwest. They've tried to build tracks out there once or twice, and it didn't work. There was also an effort to build a track on Staten Island that didn't work for whatever reason. One of the interesting things from a demographic standpoint out west, NASCAR is especially popular with a Hispanic market. And I know Phoenix International Raceway and Auto Club Speedway in Southern California have made tremendous inroads in the Hispanic market in the last 4 or 5 years. And they're really gearing up a lot of their efforts to sell tickets and do events around the Hispanic market. That's been good to see.
You should be eyeing Cuba. Perhaps. Yes. 400,000 people, I think, maybe more, come to Charlotte for this race week here in May and probably the one in October. Mm. And every May we have something called Speed Street downtown. Is there anything else like that? You were talking about the fan experience, Tim. Is there anything else like that anywhere else in the country?
There's not. We're talking about this year's theme being the 10 days of NASCAR Thunder, and mm-hmm. that's exciting. If you think about it, NASCAR has their all-star race, just like the NFL, the NBA, and the Major League. Their all-star race is here in Charlotte, at the Charlotte Motor Speedway in Concord. And then back-to-back bookends in 10 days, we have the biggest, longest race that NASCAR has, the most enduring race, the Coca-Cola 600, mm-hmm. all in the month of May. So we back-to-back that so fans can come in and they can just come from all over. It's all 50 states, 15 different countries coming into our city and our county and spending all their money, and it's great. There's nothing like it.
How do you know where these people are coming from?
Well, we do a lot with social media, but we also do our surveying. We have people out asking questions, taking polls, and those kinds of things that give us the information that we need to come back and disseminate where everybody's coming from.
I would think that a lot of these people come back year after year. This is an annual event. It's like a pilgrimage, and it's also an exciting race. I mean, particularly the Coca-Cola 600, it's been going on for a very long time. How many years has it been?
It's 56 years.
56 years.
We're going so into the 56th year.
It's become, I'm sure, it's like Christmas. It's a tradition. So how do you shake it up? How do you make it, or do you want to? I mean, there are certain things like Christmas. You don't want to change too much because then you change the whole thing. It makes it less special. But how do you keep it special and keep it fresh?
Well, fresh is the key word, and we want to keep them coming back. And keep in mind that the Coca-Cola 600 is the weekend of Memorial Day, and we throw the military in there and honor our military in a great way like nobody else before us has done it. And people like to be a part of that as well. We bring 7,000 troops to the Speedway. We honor them. We make sure that we recognize them. We have people that buy busloads of tickets to bring them in. And we just want to say thank you for your service to the country. And people like that. We have the patriotic slant to it, and it's awesome.
You know, I see that on television every year. I see the news reports of the flyovers and the troops in the stands. How do you choose? I've always wondered, how do you choose the 6,000 troops that you bring in? Is it a lottery? How do they become selected?
Well, we go to the bases and we make sure that that they pick the ones that have earned time off and mm-hmm. pick the ones that that actually want to go, that are able to make the pilgrimage to the mm-hmm. Speedway. So we kind of leave that up to the leadership of the military to do that.
Okay. David, you have been, I'm told, a race fan since childhood, which was sometime last week.
Yeah, right.
From the looks of it.
Right.
And you've been in the business for 40 years, so you know the grassroots of this sport. How far have we gotten away from what intrigued those early fans about stock car racing?
Well, rather than say how far we've gotten away, I choose to believe it's how much better have we gotten.
Okay.
There were some very early years when going to the races was a challenge, not the least of which was just, if you get down to the basics, public facilities. And now the comfort level for fans to go to racing is just enormous. But if the question goes to the heart of cars, what they were and where we are today, it's immeasurable. Cars used to literally be showroom cars that were bought. That's why they were called
right.
stock cars.
Yeah.
They would knock the front end clip off and put engines in and do some things to it. Now, of course, cars are built from ground up at the race shop.
But they're still made to look like.
Well,
up
to a point. That's correct. But, I mean, the grill work on the cars today are set to mimic what you see on the showroom cars, because brand loyalty has always been one of the key measures and at the heart of racing. And so brand loyalty is still worked in. We had gotten away from it a little bit, but NASCAR has mandated and figured out a way to bring that into the racing community as far as building cars. But if you look at the technology difference between what used to be and what is today, now we're looking at advantages in the tenths of seconds
right.
as opposed to minutes.
Right.
And so it's been quite huge.
I understand that if a Chevrolet wins a race, or if a Ford wins a race, or if a Dodge wins a race, the next day or the next week or the next month, sales of that automobile at dealerships around the country go up. Since these cars are not really what they purport to be, why is that still the case?
Well, it's still brand loyalty. And
but they're not really Chevrolet.
Well, that's true, but the name is on the car. But engines are, you know, the engines are Ford based, Chevrolet based,
okay.
and so on. And what you're talking about, used to, the adage was win on Sunday, buy on Monday.
Yeah.
And I'm told by the automobile folks that still applies. I'm not sure the impact or the volumes, but it still definitely applies.
Well, why move away from that? Why move away from actually having a car that you soup up versus a car that you build from the ground up?
Well, there's not a factory car out there that you could take to modify it to where it can do what NASCAR vehicles do today mm-hmm. When they're built from the ground up.
Okay.
The speed, the aero, and all that, just they're not the same.
David Miller is Executive Director of the North Carolina Motorsports Association. Tom Jensen is with us. He's Manager of Digital Content for FoxSports.com. And Tim Hagler is Vice President of Community Relations at Charlotte Motor Speedway. They're all here for the hour. We're talking racing. Going to take a break, pit stop, and come right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and PNC Bank. PNC helps customers achieve their financial goals with the Premium Money Market account. Information about its features is available at pnc.com/getrates. Well, there's a $22 million hole in Charlotte city budget. That hole was created by the disappearance of the business license tax, which was taken away by the state legislature, and by some miscalculations on property tax revenues after the recent reevaluation at the county. Well, City Manager Ron Carley has made some suggestions on how to make up the difference, but not everyone agrees with those options. So we've invited Ron Carley and his budget director and someone who is not in favor of what's being suggested to join us to talk about it all tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, The divide over fast-track trade legislation highlights a rift among Democrats. What differences over trade, environmental policies, and approaches to income inequality mean for the party in 2016?
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
My name is JD. I'm from South Carolina, and my favorite driver is Chase Elliott. And I like coming to the tracks because I miss school.
We're talking racing on Race Week here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. And when NASCAR talks about priming the pump for the next to attract the next generation of race fans into the fold, they're not messing around here. I mean, he's a good example of that because Nickelodeon, the TV network for kids, teamed up with the Kansas Motor Speedway for the SpongeBob SquarePants 400. That just strikes me as very funny. But do you think that translates into bringing these kids into the fold for the rest of their lives? It must.
Absolutely.
It must.
Yeah, you look at the winner's circle after the victory of that race, and you see all the characters up in the winner's circle and kids. I still have a kid at home, a 12-year-old, who likes that. And when those kids see that on TV, they want to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And so that's attracting the next generation, and we have to do that as a sport.
Does Charlotte Motor Speedway do something similar? Maybe not quite as lavish as the SpongeBob SquarePants 400.
But. Right. Well, we have our own mascots at each track, and we have Lugnut that's our mascot here that's always a child and family-friendly favorite. We have our fan zone that's outside the Charlotte Motor Speedway that's always family-friendly. We have our carnival that's there and a lot of things for kids to do while they wait for the race.
Tim Higler is the Vice President of Community Relations at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Tom Jensen is Manager of Digital Content for FoxSports.com. And David Miller is the Executive Director of the North Carolina Motorsports Association. We have NASCAR. What does the North Carolina Motorsports Association do?
NCMA, as it's referred to, is a sort of a B2B membership-driven association. We provide opportunities for everybody in the racing industry to be able to do we provide mixers and seminars and luncheons and that sort of thing. But it's the whole concept is if the North Carolina motorsports economy is so dependent upon racing, it makes sense for businesses to help keep that healthy by supporting the association for advocacy as well as the business to business. As an example, we actually have a group that just came here for this race from the UK. It's a group of 20 businessmen who have come here. They want to look at how they can expand their racing business as well as maybe even move here. So it's a very universal kind of scenario that the association represents and tries to coordinate all things business that we can do for the industry.
In this part of the country, we think stock car racing, and I know that FoxSports.com covers every sport imaginable, but you have a tab on your website that says racing. I looked at it yesterday, and I only looked at stock cars. Do you cover the IndyCar races as well?
Sure. We do. We devote the majority of our resources to NASCAR because it's the most popular, and we broadcast NASCAR races on television. We don't broadcast IndyCar races on television, so it's only natural that we support
what we broadcast.
But there's still a tremendous interest in NASCAR. You mentioned earlier about win on Sunday, sell on Monday. The marketers, the automakers, have gotten considerably more sophisticated at the track. When you go to a track now, you'll see Chevrolet, or in the case of Charlotte Motor Speedway, it's a Toyota track. They'll do data capture for people. They'll have attractions. They'll say, hey, come sit in our new Camry or come sit in our new truck. And they'll gather data from people, names, addresses, and things like that. And they'll use that to market. And all these automakers have to justify their presence in the tens of millions of dollars to their boards of directors. And they wouldn't be here if it didn't work for them. It helps their business. So
does that help the fans? They're gathering
sure.
data. They're data mining the fans. Does that help the fans? And,
sure.
And if so, how?
Sure, because it's voluntary. If you want to learn more about the latest Toyota Tundra or the latest Toyota Camry. They'll give you all sorts of information about it.
Mm-hmm. And these are educated fans because they really know cars, I would take it.
Yeah. I think it's a very good thing for them, and participation is voluntary. If you don't want to know anything about the new Toyotas, then don't walk up to the Toyota booth. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing.
David, you mentioned the $6.2 billion that racing brings into the state of North Carolina statewide, not just from Charlotte, but it also creates about 25,000 jobs throughout the state. What kinds of jobs are we talking about?
Well, obviously, it's across the board, but if you take it in its pure sense from the race teams, and it goes well beyond the race teams, and I don't mean to specifically highlight that only, but just the race teams themselves. You know, you've got I know that we had a luncheon that J.D. Gibbs spoke at last year, and he pointed out that Gibbs Racing started out with one engineer, and today they've got 45. So it is that's just one small piece that is indicative of the swell of the employment from an athletic training point of view, to office management, to engineering and everything, body hangers, people that are craftsmen in their field. So just the race teams themselves have contributed a lot. But when you take a look at all of the aftermarket high-performance companies mm-hmm. that are here that perform and provide parts and pieces and technical aid to racing itself, that is part and parcel as well.
90% of the individual race teams are located in North Carolina. Why? Because we have races all over the country, and the France family, which is NASCAR, aren't they out of Florida? I know the headquarters is now here, but why are 90% of the race teams located in North Carolina, and right here, actually, in the Charlotte region?
Well, historically, it's because racing and the Charlotte Motor Speedway, as well as some of the other tracks nearby, the Darlingtons and the Wilkesboros and that, were the traditional big races of NASCAR, and it naturally provided the home environment. And, of course, Mooresville is also referred to as Race City USA, where many of the teams just found their home, mm-hmm. and it's just sort of gone from there.
We want to know from people listening, from race fans and not race fans, do you prefer to watch the action from the stands or from your couch at home on the big old flat screen? What would get you out to a race? You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. The economic impact, I keep going back to the money because it's an astronomical amount of money of Race Week to Charlotte, I think is $230 million. And by Charlotte, I mean the whole region. It's not just Charlotte because obviously the racetrack is up in Concord, and I'm sure a lot of business gets done in Concord. How does that compare to the October race?
I think that May is our Christmas for the year because we have the back-to-back bookends with the All-Star and the Coke 600. But the total economic impact that we have at the Charlotte Motor Speedway is $451 million annually. $230 million of that is in the month of May. So May is a big month for us, and the balance of that obviously is the Bank of America 500 in October. But we also have other events and other things that we do at the Charlotte Motor Speedway as well. Visitors to this area, to Concord, Cabarrus County, the Charlotte region, every year is about 1.1 million visitors attend or come to our facilities on an annual basis. So that is visitors that are coming in, could be locals. A lot of them are from out of town, and they come in and they have the experience at the Speedway, and they spend their money, and then they go back home. So it's always exciting to see the numbers continue to grow.
And this is the biggest week of the year for the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Everybody jokes about how nobody goes to the NASCAR Hall of Fame, but they do go during Race Week. Do they go during October's Race Week as well?
Absolutely.
Do you understand why? This is the home of NASCAR. This is the home of racing. It's the birthplace of, it can arguably be said, it's the birthplace of stock car racing. There are obviously a lot of fans here. Why is it not more well attended, the NASCAR Hall of Fame?
That's a good question. I think that it's still new, and anytime you have a new venue,
yeah, but that would to me make it hot because it's topical right now. That it would, with time, it would become old hat, but it's not. It's not. It hasn't caught fire yet. Why?
I think people are still trying to find a way how to get downtown, and when they get downtown, how to park and how to navigate through the entranceway. But mm-hmm. once they get there, they'll understand that it's a great place to be.
I know that stock car racing fans like cars, but do you think the blue line, when it goes through up to your region, will help bring people to it from the races?
I think so.
get on the train and go to the NASCAR Hall of Fame.
How easy it would be to jump on and drive ride it downtown.
This is the 56th year, as you've said, of is it the 56th year of racing at Charlotte Motor Speedway or just the 600?
The Coca-Cola 600, okay. Right.
How talk about how that facility has changed over its history, how it's grown, improved, and what you've done just in the last couple of years to make it a better experience for everybody.
Well, like I said, the generation of race car fans, racing fans, are different year after year, and then you're looking at people that used to go to races back in the early 60s and early 70s. They would come to bring the coolers, and they'd watch the race and go home. But as time goes on, their children develop habits, and then over time, there has to be better experiences and more fun experiences because you compete with a lot of entertainment. You have the electronic age now that we're working with in the millennials, and we want to be able to attract visitors and fans to have fun at the track in that generation as well. So over time, you add seats. Over time, you add hospitality. You add suites, and you bring foods in. You bring other entertainment in. You over time, you have to provide venues to put on shows, concerts, and those kind of events.
I remember growing up that if you were in an NFL town and the stadium didn't sell out for that Sunday, your town would be blacked out on television. You couldn't see the game on TV because the stadium wasn't sold out. The NFL has abolished that. Maybe they just saw it as a losing game, or maybe they make so much more money on television, it doesn't matter if anybody comes to the stadium. I don't know. Is that the same in racing? Because people do like to sit there and watch their 60-inch televisions and the surround sound, crank it up and let the cars go around their heads at home. And it's air-conditioned, and they can put it on pause if they want to go get a snack. Yeah. I mean, is that becoming a significant problem for racing?
It's not a problem. Technology has really created more interest in our sport, in that behind the scenes and the interviews that the television announcers have during the events gets those fans a lot more interested in it, and they come out and experience it themselves. So I think TV coverage is great, and it's been great for our sport, but it also has created a lot of interest in fans come out and want to see it for themselves.
Tom, you write about racing and have written about racing for a long time. Who is your audience and who reads you? Who are the eyeballs and what do they want from you?
I think who reads me are people who are passionate race fans. I think there are several subgroups within racing, and I think the people who take the time to read articles are the really hardcore racers. They want to know news. They want to know what's going on with their favorite driver. They want to know when they see something on the track, they want an explanation of what happened. And mostly I think they want to stay atop the news. You know, we were talking a minute ago, how has technology changed? I covered my first 600 in 1997 in the old media center. And we had, when you were ready to file a story, there were two phone lines and you had to unplug and go over, take your computer and modem and plug it into this phone line and take about 3 minutes to send a story. Now everything's high-speed wireless. Twitter, we post video almost instantaneously. It's gotten so much more sophisticated, and I think it's a much better experience for the fan. And I can understand wanting to stay home and watch on your 60-inch flat screen with your iPad giving you the rundown and you know,
and here in the pit
scanner feed and all that. But there's nothing like going out to the track. I took my son for the All-Star race, instead of working, I took my 14-year-old son, and we sat in the stands. It's his favorite race. I take him there every year. And it's just something special on a nice night. He just loves it.
You use the word sophisticated, and I think that's a word that we would never have applied to racing 20 years ago, but I think it's an apt word to use now. And I would say that it is probably the most sophisticated sport in the world, isn't it? Given the technology that we're talking about. Well, these are not people coming off buying a stock car for $200 and souping it up. These are incredibly sophisticated devices, marketed in a incredibly sophisticated way, the technology that surrounds each race that brings information to people either at the track or at home or wherever they happen to be is sophisticated is not even a good word. It defies description.
Well, You can't help but agree with that. And the level of sophistication is sort of also concurrent with the fact that so much has happened that it allows race cars to be sophisticated. But if you think about a car that is built from the ground up, mm-hmm. and we're talking NASCAR here, from the ground up, that's a sophisticated process in and of itself. I mean, these are like this is the same technology but different that you find in any automobile manufacturer. It's just highly specialized. And NASCAR is definitely moving into an area that is much more sophisticated. We were talking prior to this show that one of the things coming up where you used to be able to see dial instruments on the dash panel, that's going to be going away soon. It's all going to be digital, mm-hmm. It's visual. And that's just one small piece of an indicator of what's going on. But when you're spending a lot of money to investigate how fast an air gun can take a lug nut on and off just on that level, if you take it on the very basics and then you go up the scale to the rest of the car, you have to agree that the technical advantages that are coming is quite sophisticated.
Would that have locked at some of the great grandfathers of the mm-hmm. sport? Would this level of sophistication have either locked them out of this sport or turned them off?
I can tell you that there have been some guys who are not in the sport anymore because NASCAR has gotten so tight on the rules. It used to be, in the old days, you could pretty much do what you wanted.
They were outlaws.
They were definite outlaws. There were guys like Junior Johnson. And
he was an outlaw.
And that's true. He literally was an outlaw. And NASCAR has gotten tighter and tighter and tighter with the rules books packages over the years. And the reason they've done that mm-hmm. is to attract sponsors who are going to spend $25 million a year to be on a car. They have to believe they have a fair shot at winning. They have to believe the game's fair for everybody. It has to be transparent. So NASCAR has made it less and less easy for guys to cheat and for guys to mess around with the rules. I'll tell you one of my favorite Junior Johnson stories. He read the rule book years ago and said, car has to weigh 3,500 pounds at the start of the race. Doesn't say what it has to weigh after the race. So when he'd race at short tracks like North Wilkesboro or Richmond, he'd weld 100 pounds of lead to the inside of each of the four wheels on the car. So the first pit stop, you'd see the crew guys going, barely being able to move the tires, and they'd put tires and wheels on that were 100 pounds lighter, and all of a sudden the car was 400 pounds lighter because they didn't weigh it after the race. Uh-huh. NASCAR figured that out eventually, and that's kind of how all the rules go. Somebody comes up with something, somebody else on another team figures out what they're doing, they go tell NASCAR, NASCAR passes a rule, that's it.
They got to stop deflating the footballs, though, I got to tell you.
Yep.
We have to take a break. We're coming right back with more of our conversation about NASCAR as we sit here in the middle of race week in Charlotte. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Queen City Audio, Video, and Appliances, local purveyors of premium appliances since 1952, including KitchenAid. More information about KitchenAid's new look at queencityonline.com. And WTVI PBS Charlotte, presenting leadership expert John Maxwell Thursday at 9 a.m., discussing his soon-to-be-released book, Intentional Living, the difference between good intentions and intentional living. Tickets at pbscharlotte.org. The divide over fast-track legislation highlights a rift among Democrats. And on the Diane Rehm Show today at 10 o'clock, in 20 minutes from now, they'll talk about the differences over trade, environmental policies, and approaches to income inequality and what they mean for the party in the 2016 election. That's on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to talk racing, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back.
John Boyer, President and CEO of the Beckler Museum of Modern Art, a WFAE underwriter.
It's made a big difference in our general attendance. We always ask where people have heard about us, and it just seems more and more it's WFAE. Smart businesses that want to reach the most informed audiences will have to look at public radio and what it can bring them.
For more information, email underwriting@wfae.org.
Hi, my name is Jody Shear, and I'm from Hershey, Pennsylvania. And my favorite driver is Tony Stewart. My favorite thing about going to the track is going to the pits.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about NASCAR and racing during race week. The sprint race was run on Saturday night. The Coca-Cola 600 is Sunday at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Sunday, Charlotte Motor Speedway. Tim Hagler is with us. He's Vice President of Community Relations at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Tom Jensen is Manager of Digital Content with FoxSports.com. David Miller is Executive Director of the North Carolina Motorsports Association, NCMA. We ask folks to participate on Facebook or Twitter or email to tell us what they liked about racing and whether they would rather see it at home or be at the racetrack, what would get them to the racetrack. Twitter comment here I'll share with you. We go to the track to tailgate with friends, then head home when the race starts and watch from the couch, and that's because getting out of the lot post-race is a bad, bad joke.
They must park in the bad area.
Well, how many cars are in those lots?
Oh my gosh! I mean, we've got about 2,200 acres on campus there in Concord at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So a lot of it is parking, and we continue to do the best we can. And I think we've done a great job over the past number of years in partnering with the local law enforcement, with Concord City Police and the State Highway Patrol, and moving the flow of traffic. You know, we've got everything going down Bruton Smith to hit I-85 and 29 with the counterflow lanes moving away from the track. So we've done a great job. Those lots empty out a lot quicker than they used to 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
I got to tell you, leaving the All-Star race Saturday night, I got out faster than I ever have.
I've heard that.
Dennis emails, I love NASCAR racing at Charlotte Motor Speedway, but I live 25 minutes from the track. Normally, it takes 4 hours to get home after a race. The HDTV is a better option. This is a running theme here. Eric and Charlotte emails, please talk about NASCAR's efforts to attract more diversity to the sport. As an African-American fan, I'm pleased at the sport's attempts to draw a more diverse fan base. Who wants to talk about that?
I'll speak just real quickly on it. NASCAR is very proactive on that, and I think it's a great thing what they are promoting. And diversity is across the board. I mean, if you take Danica Patrick as being one example, obviously in the upper ranks of NASCAR, but you've got
how many younger Danica Patricks are there coming up?
A lot.
There are. Lot, yeah. It was really interesting this weekend. I was at the restaurant there at the Speedway, and there were two little girls that came in, I mean, all decked out, and Danica Patrick, and I thought to myself, there it is. Those are the seeds that are being planted, and I think that return will, you know, it may not happen all tomorrow, but he's right. There's a lot there, and there's going to be a lot more coming.
Okay. NASCAR has a pretty aggressive diversity program. I'll be honest, when I started in the sport, 99% of the faces you saw in the garage were white. That's changing now. I mentioned earlier about the movement out west to attract Hispanic race fans and drivers. Daniel Suarez in the NASCAR Xfinity Series won the pole for yesterday's race in Iowa. He's going to be a star. Bubba Wallace, an African-American driver, has won a couple of races in the Truck Series. He's an up-and-comer. I think there's no question NASCAR was behind the times. I think they've made very aggressive and bold moves in the last decade to try to close that gap and get caught up. And there's several young up-and-coming women, female drivers, too, who I think you're going to hear from in the next few years.
Bill emails, it would seem that a NASCAR-type hauler full of racing memorabilia and traveling to the tracks during the season would be a great way to promote the Hall of Fame. It could also be used for school visits, festivals, etc. And Bill from Matthews writes, Formula One is experimenting with electric race cars. Does NASCAR have any future? I'm all choked up about the whole idea.
Going green.
That's right. Does NASCAR have any future plans to embrace this new technology? I can imagine the call, gentlemen, start your engines, followed by no noise at all. During the race, the only noise you would hear coming from the cars would be from slicing through the air. The crowd could actually talk to each other and not have to worry about going deaf. What about that?
That's un-American.
What about an Elon Musk team?
Tesla team.
Well, maybe the day is coming to where that will happen, but I have an idea.
They have to change cars halfway through the 600.
They may, but also I believe that they'll have to put big speakers on because they're going to have to pipe in noise. They're going to have broadcasts out of the car.
Well, they actually do on some of these electric cars. They generate noise because they don't make any noise.
That's right.
Really. So could there be a NASCAR all-electric division?
I don't know if they're working on that now. Yeah. I think that when you look at NASCAR racing, and especially at the Charlotte Motor Speedway and all the other tracks, it's more than just it's a number of senses that the fan experiences. And some of those senses, other than sight, you've got the sound. You've got the smell of the fuel and the rubber and
the clutches. Just have ZZ Top play through the whole race.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you know, the pre-race concert with ZZ Top's going to be pretty exciting with the Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. But going back to the senses, I mean, that's what the fan experience is all about. And they smell the smells of the foods that are out there in the infield and the fan zones. So to go all electric, you miss that sound of the cars going around the track. That's exciting.
Could it be said that the developments over the years in NASCAR and stock car racing have led to better automobiles that we actually drive? Could it be said that that's true, or is that completely a different story?
Oh, absolutely, it's true.
So why not get on the cutting edge of electric evolution and help us develop better electric cars, faster electric cars, although they're pretty darn fast already, better batteries for electric cars?
I think that NASCAR could maybe some point in the future have an electric series. And I think that might be a way to attract younger people. Uh-huh. You know, one of the biggest challenges the sport faces, when I was a kid, man, you couldn't wait to get your driver's license. A car was freedom. A car was everything. You know, that was the biggest thing in your life, even more than girls in high school, was get that driver's license. And now, you know, I have a daughter who's 17 and a half, and she doesn't drive.
Right.
She has no interest in driving, and I think maybe electric cars and technology is a way to get some of these millennials who aren't naturally interested in cars and racing into the fold.
Well, you mentioned I was going to bring up millennials because there's also this move of younger people and some older people, but younger people moving to the urban areas of cities like downtown Charlotte so that they don't have to drive. They don't have to own a car. Well, if you're not invested in a car driving culture, can you be invested in a car driving sport?
My belief is you can, because I think that even those that move downtown, as we're talking about, I think that today there's still kids that are out there that are going to race at the dirt tracks as kids. I think the appreciation for racing may still continue.
But if you can sit on your sofa and play a racing game, a video game, and actually be involved as the driver of the car competing against somebody else who may be on the other side of the country on the internet driving the other car, can you be as interested in going to see a race where you are passive?
You got to get them to the track.
Right.
I'll tell you a story. A few years ago in Phoenix, we did an event in conjunction with the Phoenix Business Journal. NASCAR president Mike Helton came out and spoke. We did a breakfast, and there were maybe 300 business leaders out there. And we brought a car, a real race car.
Mm-hmm.
And as people were filing out of breakfast, they kind of looked at it and they looked at it. And the driver got in and fired it up and the ground shook. And women were going, oh, my, oh, my.
Some of the
guys were going, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, it was amazing how visceral the reaction was to seeing that car run. And that's what you got to get to attract people. You got to make them feel it, touch it, get close to it. That's what gets them hooked.
What about when they get in the seat? To the next level and get in the seat, there's a lot of schools out there that they can participate in, and they can get in a passenger seat. Stock cars have one driver's seat, but there are some that are modified. You can get them in a passenger seat and let them go 170, 150
miles an
hour.
Well, you do that on the track, don't you?
That's correct, yes. So that's the other sense of, you know, the sound, the power, the competition, and being able to go fast down the straightaway like the drivers.
I've done those racing simulators at the NASCAR Hall of Fame. How true to the real experience is that? Because that's pretty darn – it gives you a really good appreciation of what it takes to drive one of these cars, and it is not like driving the I-485 loop. Even if you go left the whole time, it's not like that at all.
I think the visual and the depth perception of the screen is pretty good, But nothing's like the G-forces that you get when you get in that seat and you go on the 24-degree banking at Charlotte Motor Speedway and you feel it and you press down in the seat and you're going over 150, 170 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Nothing like it.
Denise on Facebook writes, "Action from the stands. I'm a transplant from New Jersey and couldn't be more thrilled to live 5 miles from the track. Living in the heart of NASCAR country made our transition here much better. I'm on my porch listening to the show, and I can hear cars on the track. Never gets old." That must be music to your ears.
I love it. I can tell you, I grew up in Harrisburg, and growing up, hearing the events that take place at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, it was like the circus is in town. It was exciting. You know, people gravitate to the excitement, and I was the same way.
Abe in Charlotte writes, "Can Tom talk about his predictions for the 600? What stories should race fans be watching out for this weekend in Charlotte?"
Well, there's a number of storylines. I think Kevin Harvick and Jimmy Johnson have won the last 7 races on mile-and-a-half tracks between them, not counting the All-Star race, which Denny Hamlin won. So I think Johnson and particularly Harvick are two of the favorites. How will Kyle Busch fare in his first full-length race back after missing 12 weeks with a broken leg and a broken foot? I think the Penske guys, Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano, were strong. And, of course, can Jeff Gordon win his final Coca-Cola 600?
Email comment, "Electric motorcycles are already beginning to eat the gas bike's lunch. NASCAR's days are numbered."
Oh, boy.
I understand that over the winter, the Charlotte Motor Speedway demolished a seating section built in 1997, which included 37 luxury seats. How many seats did the Speedway lose by taking out that section, and why did you do it?
It was about 35,000 to 40,000 seats.
Wow.
You know, in right-sizing all stadiums and all tracks and looking to enhance the fan experience to keep them coming back, we've got some exciting plans that we want to do with that space.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't revealed those yet, but it'll be coming out soon that it will be an improved experience for the fans. Those fans that were sitting on that second turn, keep in mind, could not see our Speedway TV, which is another fan enhancement that we can do graphics and we can follow the race that those fans on the front stretch in turns 1 and turns 4 could see that Speedway TV. So,
well, 3 years ago, you added, I think, a dozen 16-person pit suites. You sold them on an annual basis for $50,000. All of them are sold out. Another recent addition is an infield building called the Hub, which is billed as a private compound with catered menus, parking, pit passes, and the Champions Pavilion holds 300 people. It includes single $500 tickets. Does that mean that more high-dollar people are coming to the races, that it is becoming the sport of kings?
Well, it's not necessarily a sport of kings, but there's a lot of corporate involvement. There's a lot of money that's out there that they want to entertain their customers. They want to entertain their employees, but it's also attainable for the average race fan as well.
Because this is the sport that attracts more people from faraway places. And you know, very few people will follow the Detroit Lions to Charlotte to watch a football game. They will, but not many. A lot of people come to these races to see their favorite driver every year, and they'll travel from all over the world to get here, which makes it the most expensive sport, really, to follow, doesn't it?
It's great for tourism here in our region.
But it's a very expensive thing for a fan to do. If you go to a lot of these races, or you plan every year to come back to Charlotte in May and October, and maybe go to Atlanta, but you live in Oregon, I mean, that's an expensive trip.
Right. Well, we've got tickets for every person that's out in every type of income level. So we've got an experience that just about any fan can afford.
This is also a really expensive sport to participate in because these cars are, I don't know what they cost, but they cost millions of dollars. And that, I guess that is why you have all these sponsorships that they are all over their uniforms and all over the cars. But I understand that sponsors at all level are beginning to bail out. Sprint is dropping its association as a Cup Series sponsor after next year. GoDaddy recently announced it's severing ties with Danica Patrick after this season. The National Guard ditched Dale Earnhardt Jr. in 2014 after a 6-year relationship. Part of that's politics, I'm sure. A single car sponsorship is about $20 million a year. What's going on here that these big companies suddenly can't afford this?
Oh, this is nothing new.
Right.
Okay. They are cyclical. Typically, what happens is a company will develop a marketing plan, and it may be 3, 4, 5 years that they're going to be involved in NASCAR, and then they move on to something else. UPS had a very successful marketing program in NASCAR for a number of years, got out, and now they're investing the bulk of their money, I believe, in college football. We have had some new sponsors come in. Xfinity came in and took over title sponsorship of NASCAR's number two series. Aris, A-R-R-I-S, mm-hmm. a maker of modems and telecommunications equipment, came into Joe Gibbs Racing this year, new sponsor into the sport, sponsoring Carl Edwards, one of the sport's most popular drivers. GoDaddy said they're getting out because they want to go international. They've kind of saturated the American market. Their next growth opportunity is international, and NASCAR's not as big international. And they are probably going to keep Danica on a personal services contract. Mm. So, I mean, the sponsorship thing, they come and go.
We only have about 30 seconds sure. left, but Tim, you have said that Charlotte Motor Speedway is the only race vacation destination for fans seeking the ultimate NASCAR getaway.
Correct.
How so?
Well, you can camp there. We have a lot of things that the fans can do. There's all the race shops that they can tour that's located close by the Speedway. You've got the NASCAR Hall of Fame. So if you're a NASCAR fan, the Charlotte Motor Speedway is the place to come.
Tim Hegler would say that because he's Vice President of Community Relations for Charlotte Motor Speedway. Interesting that you would tie that in. Tom Jensen is Manager of Digital Content for FoxSports.com, and David Miller, Executive Director of NCMA, the North Carolina Motorsports Association. Thank you all for the hour during what I know for you is a very busy week. Thanks.
Real pleasure.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows,